tipped in the air and knocked away. KU's got to win it. Blah, big time two-hand slam by Hunter Dickinson.
Kansas is the 2023 WNIT champions.
This is the Jayhawker Podcast, presented by the University of Kansas Health System.
Happy holidays, here for another edition of the Jayhawker Podcast, brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System and Black & Veatch. Big Dub, how we doing? Welcome.
Gregory, I'm here.
My holidays are
happy. Let's do it.
I really respect this rivalry upcoming. Wore a sport coat today. Wayne and I just came from an event. One of the Kansas City Roundball events where Brandon Snyder and Bill Self spoke, and it was really cool, a little twist or new to the Roundball. I had a sponsored by the Folds of Honor. Folds of Honor is a charity that former Jayhawk Dan Rooney started, and it was a really. Were you there when she spoke?
No, I wouldn't.
It was
familiar with Dan Rooney, Folds of Honor,
so
great golf sponsor.
Provide scholarships to fallen victims of. Fallen soldiers, families, and over 51,000 scholarships they've provided over the years. So got a good Jayhawk tie to that one with Dan Rooney. But Bill Self, obviously, he always talks about, yeah, we're young and dumb and soft and we're no good and we haven't played to our potential yet. And number two in the country, lost one game. Perfect storm against Marquette. But we'll get to all that here in a little bit, just to kind of update you on all things KU. Volleyball had a frustrating end to their season last week. Five sets against Penn State, the ultimate. You know, you're a volleyball dad. I was a volleyball dad, and you play that third with our age kids or the fifth set in college, and it gets to 15 to 13, or what was it, 16 to 14. It's just the ultimate gut punch, 2-2, and just could not – finish it. But what an amazing season that Ray Bouchard and his girls had this year.
Yeah, Ray Bouchard, the coach of the year in the Big 12, Ray right. Bouchard. And it was about what you would expect when you saw the brackets come out with Kansas, Big 12 power, and Penn State, a Big 10 power. It's about the slugfest that you thought it was going to be going all the way to five. An incredible environment there in Horace, but not good enough to help pull the girls through on a couple more points. But it certainly doesn't diminish the incredible year that they had and the job that Coach Bouchard and his staff did in helping that team punch above their weight class for most of the year.
Yeah, and, you know, in his 25th year, it's going to be reload. Well, you know, there's nothing to make us not expect to be there once again.
Big recruiting class coming. I think number one, I think the best in his tenure. So the expectations are still high.
It's crazy.
When you generate the type of momentum and attention like they did throughout the Big 12 and even being able to host, more people want to be a part of that. And a couple of the key catalysts for that Ray Bouchard-led squad was via the transfer portal. And one of the things that's very helpful in any collegiate sport is when you have transfer athletes come in and do well, future transfer athletes take notice and they want to drop in and be a part of that. And so it's no wonder they've got some more great talent coming in.
Yeah, so many great things to come in his 26th season. Since we were last with you, obviously football, we knew they were bowl eligible. Mm-hmm. We knew it was going to be one of two or three bowls, and it was the Guaranteed Rate Bowl.
Yes.
We got the call. Phoenix, Arizona, at the Arizona Diamondbacks Stadium. Just played in the World Series there, so I'm kind of looking forward to being there. Our opponent, the UNLV Running Rebels, kind of thought that it was going to be a Big Ten. We had heard Northwestern, we had heard Wisconsin, maybe Minnesota. We got UNLV. They had a 9-win season, but Kansas finished out strong with a win at Cincinnati, propelled them into this bowl. You and I have been dealing with logistics as far as tickets and travel with our donor base. And once again, our donors and supporters have jumped in a big way, sold our allotment of tickets, and I'm sure we're going to get more. It's going to be a fun atmosphere. Obviously, we wish it was maybe like the 27th or 28th.
Sure.
But
worse places to be in December than hopefully 75 and sunny in the desert.
Yes. love Scottsdale, love the Phoenix area. So we're going to be there for like 36 hours. We're going to leave on early on December 26th, the day of the game, and then head back the next day. But we're going to get our money's worth and support our guys. And, you know, heavy favorite, but doesn't really mean much. You know, we all favorites lose all the time.
Hey, there's a reason why UNLV is invited to that bowl, and it's because they're capable of winning. And I don't necessarily think that the matchup diminishes anything for Kansas. You're in a bowl. You're going to win it, and got to go down there and take care of business.
You're going to get better.
Yeah.
You know, you're building for the next year. And like you mentioned about volleyball and the transfer portal, you know, you look all over the country, and there's guys leaving left and right. And the latest number I saw so far, we've only had two Kansas Jayhawks that have entered the transfer portal. So almost full squad going to be heading down to Arizona to play. And that's a testament to our staff and our momentum that guys want to be a part of it.
Yeah.
Guys want to be a part of the first back-to-back bowl teams in a long, long time for Kansas and an opportunity to win a bowl. I mean, last year we talked so much about how fun it was and what a great game it was, but ultimately we lost. And that still sits in their craw a little bit. It was a great game. Shot crazy numbers. Jalen Daniels, everybody had crazy numbers, but it was a loss. And I don't want to experience that again. You want that momentum no matter who you play. Let's get a win. Let's get to 9 wins. Let's keep hot on the recruiting trail. Keep hot on the transfer portal. Continue to put the pieces together. It's a great time in Kansas athletics. You and I, you know, we've been over around Memorial Stadium, and we've talked all season about what it looks like over there, and it is even that much more different.
We got action. We got movement.
We got action. We got heavy equipment. We got guys. There's about 4 construction trailers there in lot 91, I believe. I mean, it's an aggressive timeline.
We should auction off use of a bulldozer or wrecking ball or something over there. I mean, that'd have been pretty cool.
I would have agreed, and I would have liked to have seen, like, get a sledgehammer and sell 5 wax at something, like, you know, that you've seen them do with
cars. Or full-blown dynamite C4. I don't even know if they do that anymore. That's like Looney Tunes cartoon.
That's like Bugs Bunny or whatever. Yeah, yeah. Maybe. I don't know. I'm sure there's some trigger. It's probably, nowadays, it's probably just your phone and you go boom. Mm-hmm. But that would be kind of an interesting.
What was that sound again?
Boom.
Yeah, that's exactly what it sounded like.
So football, again, you know, big time support going down there. And everyone that's making the effort, it's an effort. Because, you know, it's either leave on Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, or right after, you know, you're all fat and happy after sitting around all day watching NBA and NFL.
Phoenix is an easy place to get to. You know, you got to hop on a plane and, you know, be able to get there. So we appreciate the folks that are going to be going there. And I'm hearing that there's a significant amount of former players that are making an effort to get down there. And so, of course, it's really exciting for our fan base to be able to experience back-to-back bowl seasons, but also the alumni, the former players, many of which who – you know, wish they would have had this opportunity, especially the guys here as of late, but it's great to see them continue to engage, support Coach Lance and what he's doing there to go out of their way to cheer those guys on down in Phoenix.
And it's an opportunity for guys like you and me while we're down there for that 30 hours or whatever we're going to be there to talk about, you know, with our fan base and former players, how important the Gateway Project is, how important NIL is. You and I deal in that space a lot. And former players can be a huge part of that, having the ability to give back, which it's an unprecedented time because guys can give back directly to our guys. And it's an arms race. And again, you and I live it every day, and it's important in every sport. But you look at, like I said, the transfer portal right now, there's guys that are going places like Dylan Gabriel. At Oklahoma is leaving. I thought he was like a perfect fit for Oklahoma. You just never know. You don't know what they're going to get somewhere else. You don't know what they're offering. And we have to do a good job with it.
You never know, but it feels like it's the norm now, right? It's the norm.
Yeah, 100%.
And We need to adapt to that, both in the way we look at it, but both in the ways that, that we engage Kansas athletics.
Because the way I look at it and the way I tell people when I'm out fundraising for all things, but when you talk about NIL, there's coaches out there that don't like it. There's coaches that have probably retired when you look at basketball because they don't like it. You look at a Roy Williams, a Mike Krzyzewski, a Jay Wright. But if you don't like it and you leave, I get it. But if you don't like it and you stay and you don't do anything about it, you're going to get left behind. You're not going to get guys that are going to help you win at an elite level. So you're either going to embrace it, get left behind, or retire.
Adapt or die? Is that?
Adapt or what?
Adapt or die?
Adapt or die. It's a little aggressive.
A little aggressive, but yes. Yeah. But I'll tell you what I don't like.
Guys.
I don't like Florida State not getting the CFP. Sorry, folks. My wife is a Florida State Seminole. I've been a Seminole fan for a long time. But I do like Jim Harbaugh kind of jabbing it, the system, the powers that be. Hey, make sure we share some of the revenue with the players, which I think is only a matter of time before that has to happen as well, particularly when it comes to bowl season and CFP season.
Yeah, because the screwy part of NIL is, yes, they gave us the ability to get money to our athletes, but that's on the backs of Wayne Simien, Greg Gurley, and others to go find our donors that and business owners that would normally give to the school, but now are given to them, which indirectly, I wouldn't say it hurts, but there's – you know, less money going here, more money going there. So to your point about sharing the whatever it is, billions of dollars, that's more than likely inevitable.
Yeah.
But the Florida State thing, what a crock. I mean, I don't care about it. Florida State means nothing to me, but if I'm in a Power Five conference, I mean, just you got to put yourself in their shoes. How would you feel if Kansas was undefeated? They just didn't think we were good enough, and we were playing with Jason Bean, even though he's a backup. He's not Jalen Daniels, and they left us out. We'd be livid.
Yeah. Well, this is probably the reason why I brought it up. Why is it worth mentioning on this podcast, aside from me having some Florida State ties, is because it's moves like that that are eventually going to trigger the next round of conference realignment.
Right.
And if one domino falls, like a Florida State going to the SEC or somewhere else, guess what? It creates a ripple effect to every other conference, either positively or negatively. I'm grateful that we're in a place right now where we've had some positive things happen from conference realignment for the Big 12 for once.
For once.
But it doesn't mean that we're insulated, we as in the Big 12, insulated from some other seismic shifts taking place. And it is moments like that that happen years later that shift things around.
My question is, let's just hypothetically say, rewind a week, J.J. McCarthy goes down with an injury in the Big Ten title game. Does Michigan get into the college football playoff?
According to the criteria and what seemingly happened with the Florida State Seminoles, it looked like it'd be no.
I don't know who I saw online, but they said Florida State should have never have said that Jordan Travis is out for the rest of the year. They should have said it's day to day, and he might be back. We're not 100% sure. Mm. He's rehabbing, saying all things that are truthful, even though probably wouldn't have been able to play. I think it's a broken. Why do you have to, for lack of a better term, be so honest? The next this scenario happens next year, and a quarterback gets hurt, I bet you that school's like, it looks like he's a sprained ankle.
Might
have seen his bones sticking out of his sock.
You're not wrong.
You know, I don't know. This decision sure seems like it came down to, if you put Florida State in, there's not one SEC school in the Final Four, right? Mm. That's it. And they didn't want that, right?
Apparently.
Because it wasn't Texas, because you couldn't put Alabama in and have Texas out because Texas beat Alabama. I don't know. We could talk about this for hours because, you have a little bit of a tie. I have no tie. But to your point, there will be a ripple effect. Right now, every ACC school is saying they just said that our conference isn't good enough to go undefeated in and play for a national title. Mm. So why are we still in it? If we are in a conference that if we go undefeated, I guarantee you Notre Dame goes undefeated, they're in it. And they're kind of in the SEC, or excuse me, the ACC, right?
Kind of.
Kind of. I don't quite understand that deal, but yeah. Talk about different
rules. Well, that's why you need committees. Committees. Hey, but speaking of committees, all right, and we'll have to tap into this a little bit later, Kansas Athletics had a nice committee going, and we recently got a chance to hire an incredible new leader for our women's soccer program. Coach Nate Lee from Xavier.
I met him the other day. He's great.
Yeah.
And his wife, great, so. Kids. And excited about that.
Yeah, we'll have him on and get a chance to hear his backstory, but lots of big elation and excitement around his hire to lead that program in a really exciting time for soccer in the Kansas City area as a whole with the World Cup coming and the Casey Curran getting ready to come online. And,
yeah, over the next couple weeks before the end of the year, we'll get Nate on, and then we're going to get Coach Leipold on. We're gonna take this show on the road, sit with Lance, talk all things Kansas football, recap the season, talk about the bowl, talk about the Gateway Project. So look for that here in the hopefully next week. We were trying to do it this week, couldn't get it done. He's out recruiting right now, which is
back at it.
Everybody thinks you get an off week. There's no off week.
Happy holidays. No, dudes are on the road reeling them in.
Before we get to basketball, one last thing. When you brought up committees, I found this gem on YouTube or wherever you get your stuff. Mike Leach in 2017 talked about
gold
committees. And he goes, well, yeah, we should just have a committee. Like, why should we have a playoff? Because this really isn't a playoff. I mean, there's a committee that determines the playoff. It's not every other football division, NFL, Division II, all down the line, there's a bracket. And you play for a championship, except college football. Even though there's a Final Four, that Final Four is determined by a committee. And if you get a chance, go to YouTube or whatever and check it out, because Mike Leach is unfortunately passed away last year, but one of the all-time great soundbite press conference guys. And he goes, well, let's put a committee together. And they know better than real football people on what to do. And let the committee, why don't you just have the committee say who's going to be in the four-team playoff before the season, because they know better than the people that play the game. So if you get a chance, check out Mike Leach. This is the Jayhawker Podcast, brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System and Black & Veatch. We're excited to talk about two things. Last week, one of the all-time great atmospheres in Allen Fieldhouse. You and I have been to 500-plus games at Allen Fieldhouse, probably maybe 1,000, I don't know. We often miss a game. I put the UConn atmosphere in my top 4 or 5. Mm. Wow. I want to know your opinion, because it was hyped. The building was turned up. We played early on, which made it even more hype. But where would you rank the atmosphere against UConn?
It was incredible. I think it was the largest student camping group in the history of student camping, which was phenomenal.
And it might be eclipsed
by this weekend. Yeah. But certainly, I mean, tip of the hats to the students and the student section for all the work that they do. I mean, they're camping out uncomfortably, waking up 6 a.m., sitting on the floor, waiting to get in. And they were phenomenal.
It was cool. Hunter Dickinson, some of the other guys went and bought donuts and were handing them out to all the guys.
Yeah.
I walked in one day. So really cool interaction by our coaches and our players.
Yeah, no, and that was great. And, of course, the addition of the new lights. Got some new neon lights flashing back and forth there.
For those of you who haven't been to Allen this year, right at pregame video time, it'll go dark. But these new LED lights we got can kind of be red and blue, and the stands are kind of dark. And it's just different. It kind of creates an atmosphere that we haven't ever had, because it's always just been bright and here you go, tradition.
Yeah, no, and so it was good. And then, of course, the start that the guys got off to just defensively, which really set the tone for the whole game, was really good. As good of an environment as it was, as entertaining of a game as it was, as big of a performance that we saw, I don't quite have it in my top 5, but I did think that it was certainly up there.
Well, then I'm going to have to ask, what is your top five?
I mean, you could throw a ton out there. You can throw...
Well, you got to throw five.
Okay, I'll start with five. In no order quite yet. Were you a part of the KU-Indiana game?
Yes.
Jacques Vaughn KU-UCLA game?
I was a junior. Jacques made a last second shot.
Man, those are pretty tough.
I saw a lot of these from the bench or from press row. You were supposed to laugh that hard.
I'm sorry.
I'm right here. I can hear you.
But it was a joke, though, right?
Okay.
You got to go Keith Langford, Georgia Tech, overtime.
You were on that
game
one.
There. You go Thomas Robinson, KU Missouri, big block there. Love the big time comeback and quadruple overtime game against was that OU?
Oklahoma, yep, triple Buddy overtime. Hill. Buddy Hill. 40 something. That's four.
Yes. KU Texas, Kevin Durant game. That was pretty elite, okay. Right there. So that's already out of.
And some people have mentioned to me the West Virginia game where we had a crazy comeback. The game itself wasn't that great because we played so poorly. But the final two.
The West Virginia game specifically.
Yeah, the final 240 or whatever. That was as good. Yeah. And overtime was as good as it gets. But as a game as a whole, because the game against UConn kind of had it all. We jumped out, and I'd be curious what you think. We were only up 7.5, and it seemed like we should have been up 20. Mm-hmm. Tristan Newton made every contested three he took late. We played great defense for 29 seconds, and I don't know if we could have played better defense other than blocking his three-point attempts. True. He made everything, and then we fouled 2 3-point shooters. So 7-point game at half. You and I were back there. I'm like, God, I just wish we were up more than 7. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then sure enough, we came out a little sluggish. They came out and took, a 5-point lead.
Yeah.
And then something happened that hadn't happened all year, which is a barrage of threes. We go 9 of 14 in the game. Yeah. Kevin McCullough, who we know that's his one roadblock to being a first-round draft pick, is shooting, right? He's an elite defender. He's basketball IQ off the charts. He's mid-range. His game at the rim. He can post. He can do everything except shoot the ball consistently. And who do we go to when we're down 5? Back-to-back threes, give us 1-point lead? Kevin McCullough. Then Hunter Dickinson followed with a 3 of his own.
Yeah.
And, by the way, speaking of Hunter Dickinson, everyone who's listening, there was a fake Twitter account that says he's suspended for 3 games. Don't believe it. Hunter Dickinson has not been suspended.
Stop texting me.
How many texts did you get?
Dozens.
I got a ton,
what
too.
Are we doing?
I finally texted Hunt, doing? And I go, it was last night, I was at dinner, I go, you've been suspended? He goes, no, it's fake. Shut up, basically. And that's what I then told to people. But Hunter will be
more than available.
100% on Saturday. And he's going to relish this environment because he loves, whether it's a home game, it's a great atmosphere, or a road game, which we're going to experience next Saturday in Indiana, which Big Ten, they're going to scream and yell all kinds of things at Hunter because he's, I don't know, probably the most hated guy in college basketball for whatever reason. We love him. He's Cuddly Hunter.
I mean, maybe he deserves it, but I like it.
Oh, no, he bring
yeah,
it on.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, the UConn game had it all. And then the guy, KJ Adams, poor free throw shooter, steps up. We're up 2 with 2.5 to go, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
Makes back-to-back free throws, makes it a 4-point game. He's getting ready to get on a plane to go home to bury his mom.
Yeah,
I mean, the roller coaster of emotion. Then Bill Self in the locker room. You and I were both back there, and it was just it's been well documented because it's all over the internet, social media. If you haven't had a chance, check it out. But what he said to the team about KJ and obviously to KJ was perfect. That's why he's such a great leader of young men a role model. Everything he said was perfect. And KJ, the way he's handled this, the poise, the courage. I mean, he's played at an elite level going through all this. You know, I've lost a parent. It sucks. It's awful. Nothing like it. It's exhausting. And it's even more exhausting when you're 21 years old and you die young. I mean, my dad died when he was 62. I was 30 some odd years old. It sucked, but I mean, he was so close with his mom, and everybody, the service they say was amazing, and there's great support. And but again, for him to step up and make those two free throws just capped off a perfect night.
Yeah, no, it was a great night, and then coupling that with a big 18-point performance against Kansas City later on that weekend, man, he's certainly
6 of 10 from the free throw line,
impressing everyone with his ability to play in and through this. But even if there is a lull, even if he comes down off the adrenaline of these big performances and it hits him a little bit later, he's more than entitled to do that, or needing to take some time off a little bit later. But just what an inspiring
Coming up on Christmas break, so he'll get to go back home, be with his dad Kevin and his sisters.
One thing that you mentioned, and it got pretty tight there between a back and forth foul battle, 48 seconds in the UConn game. They started to press, steal in. El Marco had an untimely turnover there that kind of kept them in it. One thing that I would love to see in those situations is Hunter's our best free throw shooter, and he's our biggest target. We got to find a way to get him the basketball. We had him playing up in the front court, right, kind of around the top of the key area to help set screens to inbound it. But, man, once the ball gets past him, he's got to bust it as fast as he can to get on the other side of half court so we can find our biggest target and our best free throw shooter, and not, leave it up to chance with a smaller player getting in a trap and maybe getting sped up and throwing it away, or one of our other free throw shooters that isn't as efficient from the line as he is. So that was kind of the only thing I was thinking about as I was watching that kind of play out.
I agree with you. And what we do is KJ sets up at about the free throw line, and he's the screener. So he's trying to screen for DeJuan and Kevin or El Marco to get open. But he screens and then runs away, which is, believe me, is the right thing to do. But you could also change that up and just put KJ at the other end, have Hunter be that guy, then he spins back around. And, he's our safety blanket, so to speak, when you have a security blanket. Just throw it up to him when you're on the baseline out of bounds. And listen to us tell the Hall of Famer, Bill Self, what to do. And he just doesn't listen to us.
Is that what it sounded like? Because I certainly didn't want to have that type of tone.
Oh, you're backtracking now?
I'm just making sure you're not changing my tone and saying Coach Self needs to do X, Y, Z.
So if Coach Self doesn't need to do it, who are you talking to?
I was talking to Hunter being more assertive and coming across half court and finding the ball.
Backtrack. Like, I'm more than willing to tell Coach that this is a great idea.
It is a good idea.
He won't listen to me.
It is a good idea.
He won't listen to me, and he'll make fun of me somewhere or another. But you backtracking right now, I'm kind of disappointed in you.
No, I'm clarifying because I think you kind of missed the point that I was trying to make there for the sake
I'm
of
I'm not real
humor.
Good at, catching the point right away. I kind of put my own narrative. I don't know if
How about that? Which is what makes this thing right here.
Yeah, this is good.
So
this
enjoyable.
Riggs and Murtaugh. Yes.
Riggs and Murtaugh.
Only a few people will probably get that.
That's okay. Legal, 90s babies. Let's go. Yeah.
So on to the border war.
Yes. Thank you.
We were talking to the border showdown, Sunflower Showdown. Like, there's a 2 or 3 minute clip that I don't know who put it together, but it's like some kind of fun music, and it has Don Fambro on it and Pollard's on it. And it's like, it's just throwing punches with the Missouri guys and just the hard fouls. And it's whatever that voice, I hate you so much right now. You know what I'm talking about?
I saw the video. I don't know who's singing.
Whoever sings that. But it's great. It's great. And that's what it's going to be. I remember last year, in the basketball office, I was with Jay Will and Kevin, and they were asking me and Brady and Brennan what's it. They were getting ready to go to Columbia, and I was like, well, it's nothing you've ever experienced. I mean, they hate us, and they will be there an hour and a half before tip, and they will be chanting things that you can't say even on podcasts, I guess, in unison, 5,000 of them, hour and a half before the game. And signs.
Which is fairly impressive because it's like they practice.
Oh, there's a song by the Killers called Mr. Brightside. And then in the chorus, they somehow, instead of what it's just like the music, but they are able to
very creatively
say a kind of a two word phrase that involves KU and another word. And they do it but over and over. I remember Jay Will and Kevin kind of looking at me like, because when I told them what to expect, they were kind of like, really? Is it that bad? And they came out and they're like, it's that bad. I mean, it's and they're passionate fans. I'm not saying they're bad fans. They're just, you know, they love their school just like we do. It'll be interesting to see how it goes tomorrow. I mean, this is a Missouri team. As I research them, they won a game at Minnesota where they were down like 20 in the second half, came back and won. Then they go home and lose to Jackson State, who was like 1-5. They lost at home to Jackson State. Then they go to Pittsburgh and win. So obviously has a team that can beat you, but they obviously have a team that can struggle. So we're going to be turned up. The building's going to be stupid. It's going to be great. Student support will be off the charts. Saturday afternoon games, you and I love. Sunshine coming
love
in.
Love it.
The sunshine like it. Coming in off the southwest. And it kind of comes like right where I broadcast from. And it kind of blinds you and hopefully blinds them in the second half when they're trying to shoot. But it's the best atmosphere in college basketball. UConn fans that I talked to who had a little New York in them, they were a little cocky, and they kept saying, wait till you play us in Madison Square Garden, which I thought was a weird flex. I'm like, okay, and you're not your home arena? That's where you want us back? I was like, they go, oh, yeah, we're way better in Madison Square Garden. I was like, okay. Well, I kind of like to see your home arena, but I was arguing with a UConn fan, and that was their argument. I was like, okay. That's interesting, but whatever. Maybe we will play him in Madison Square Garden. I don't know. But I kind of like to go to stores. But anyway, it was a great – I talked to Danny Hurley after the game. Know him just a little bit from – we were same age, and he was just like, this is nuts. He was, I've never seen anything like it. And Sue Bird was there, you know, famous UConn player and WNBA star, and she goes, I've never seen anything. And everyone says that to a T, and it's true.
And the environment Saturday is likely going to be better.
Correct. And next year, it's going to be the same great environment, but we're going to have a $2 or $3 million speaker system that's brand new, a new scoreboard. The manufactured sounds of Allen Fieldhouse next year will be off the charts, and our organic sound of our fan base will be off the charts. So it's only going to get more difficult. But on to the game. At the event we were at today, Brian Haney, the MC of events, talked about your record. And please refresh our memories of what your record was against Missouri.
8-1, 9-1.
Like and, you, and the only one you remember is the loss, I would assume. Mm-hmm. Really pisses you off. Mm-hmm. I believe I was 6-2 in my career. Ryan Robertson was at the event today. He was 6-3, and Bill Self, of course, made fun of him for that. We were trying to get Ryan to be our guest today, but he had to get back to St. Louis, which he would have been a perfect guest because you talk about a guy that grows up in St. Louis, which is obviously Missouri Tiger country, and him deciding to leave that nest and come to Lawrence. I experienced a lot of that with him because it was right after I got done playing, and I would go to those games, and I'd sit with his parents, and in Columbia, the fan base at Missouri was relentless on Mr. and Mrs. Robertson. I mean, it was like, I don't know if that happens at our place, but man, they were the number one and two most hated people in Columbia, Missouri.
Well, it was worth it given the type of success Ryan had while he was here. And I'm sure he had plenty of opportunities when he went back to St. Charles, Missouri, St. Louis area, wherever he was from, specifically whether it was over Christmas break or summertime, where he got a chance to walk Dragon a little Rides. Bit different because of the what he and those teams were able to accomplish there. But I've got no qualms about calling it a war. Like I've got no qualms about highlighting what makes this rivalry so great and even what intensifies it more than what we would consider the Sunflower Showdown to be against K-State.
And none of us like to use the word hate or hatred, but there's a true hatred.
I would call it historical. I mean, there's some real, true historical hatred, that's involved in there. I mean, players, and at least I don't know how it was when you were there, but look, we would turn up, you know, while we were on the court there. Hey, nothing cheap, nothing malicious, but just, you know, compete.
Hard fouls.
As hard as we could, hard fouls. And the players, like, no one's thinking, it's just real ball. You know, there are times where we'd see guys, you know, on the AAU circuit or on the camp circuit afterwards or, you know, Kareem Rush, who was still in the city. Hey, we'd dap it up.
I grew up with Jervon Crudup. Yeah, we played a lot of ball together.
We're good to go on the city. But, hey, with the 40 minutes on that game, on that court together, like, it's all out. It's all, and that's okay.
It's okay.
Like, that's okay. That's just fine.
Sports.
Yeah.
So, the second time that Missouri's been in the Fieldhouse since 2012 – there was obviously a long stretch where we didn't play each other. They left for the SEC, and for some reason that was our fault that we wouldn't play them. But, okay, they left our league. I don't quite understand why they were so mad at us when they, you know.
I like that hand
gesture. Ran around.
Was it kind of like, scram? Scram? Get out of here? I like that.
We've welcomed.
Ben, you like that? Scram.
We've welcomed them back with semi-open arms, I guess is the right way to say it. And, you know, 2 years ago, both times we played them in the last 2 years, it's been a blowout.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean that's what it's going to be on Saturday. Obviously, we'll be a heavy favorite. But, you know, so many of my Missouri friends point back to 2012, and it's appropriate because Thomas Robinson is getting his jersey retired. Bill Self calls him and says, hey, you know, we know he knew that he was getting his jersey retired. It's just like, when do you want to do it, bud? And he's like, how about Missouri?
There it is.
Yes. So much discussion. One of the greatest defensive plays in the history of the most storied building in college basketball, all predicated by, if you talk to Bill and Danny about it, Danny Manning, after the timeout right before that possession, he said, let's move Thomas over to this guard because they're going to run this and he's going to switch and we need a shot blocker at the rim. He wanted Thomas's athleticism, even though I don't think we would ever say that Thomas was a great defender. He's good.
Yeah.
But he was a much better offensive player. But he made one of the greatest defensive plays. Bill referenced it today at the event. It was the greatest no call ever. Now, I will say it wasn't a foul. But we've seen that get called 9 times out of 10. With that much contact, Thomas went up vertically. And Ben's going to put a picture up to show I have a great – a picture from KU Athletics of Thomas is perfectly vertical and he blocks the shot, but it was such a violent block that Pressey's body kind of.
And Pressey was attacking the basket. His momentum was coming towards the basket.
And in a collision between Pressey and Thomas Robinson, Thomas is going to win, right?
Yeah.
And again, so many times we've seen that called a foul. It just is what it is. That's the way I was shocking that the refs swallowed their whistle at that point because it was clean, but looked to be a foul. As a Kansas fan, we love the no call. If I'm a Missouri fan, I'm pissed. We should have won in Columbia. They should have won in Lawrence. And it was the exact opposite. Marcus Denman went on a roll, you know, at the end of that game and propelled them to a win. Remember the Missouri game, too? We're down 19.
Yeah, I remember.
In the second half.
Demoralizing it felt, and you just
because the building was
you're playing it out in your mind. It can't end this way. It can't end this way.
And it would have been a sweep.
And I actually remember Landon Lucas was actually on his visit, and we were sitting next to each other, and like everything about the visit was going great. Everyone, hey, friendly, real talkative, asking questions, things like that. And then I just remember like the air leaving the field house when we got down big, and you're sitting here like, man, I don't know. And then here we come, and then ultimately crescendos into this incredible block and then a dominant performance in overtime. And, of course, the field house was magical in that moment. And Landon and I high-five and hugging each other. I'm like, hey, man, you want to be a part of this? And, I mean, he pretty
sold.
Much said he sold.
So yeah. Wayne Simeon closed
Thomas
Landon
Robinson
Lucas.
And the comeback from the Missouri
game.
I'm
trying to give you credit.
Closed. I can't take credit. I'm not going to take credit. Not there. It was the environment. We lose that game or it wasn't his magical environment. He goes to Oregon. I think Oregon was the other
probably
school that was in. Right. In
but
so.
here's the thing about this the other day. The success that Kansas basketball has is unparalleled. But you think about some of our wins and how far behind in a lot of these massive wins we were and come back a win. Look no further than the national championship, down 15 in the second half. Missouri down 19. in the Fieldhouse come back and win. West Virginia. And then I look at it as a Kansas City fan, and both Chiefs Super Bowls, down 10, late in the third or fourth quarter, both of our Super Bowl titles lately have been comebacks. So we're kind of there's so many examples of comebacks that are whatever the ESPN stupid predictor is, the 99.7% chance of losing or whatever, and we've been able to beat the odds. And maybe it goes on other places, but it sure seems like Kansas basketball in the Bill Self era has found a way to get down by a lot. Look, Kentucky this year, we're down 14. Yeah. I mean, we no one ever panics, I guess.
Well, I think, and I'm glad you mentioned that, and it's really indicative of the style of basketball that Coach Self embodies and teaches, and it's all about toughness, right?
Right.
You know, if you have, and we've been on teams and played in systems where a lot of it was predicated on how many points you can score, and then maybe when the ball doesn't go in, you don't have many other options to be able to fight and claw your way back from a deficit as dire as the ones that you mentioned. But it is something that Coach Self takes pride in, and you've seen and been around those huddles. Even in those moments, down 19, down 14, down 15 late, there's no panic in the huddle. And there's always reminiscence of other teams who've had to overcome far more. And then you start having guys tap back into their experience during boot camp. You start having guys tap back into their experiences during two-a-days and the time you got kicked out of practice during Christmas break. And you had to do 4-on-4 block out for 2 hours. And all the difficult things that we built led up to this moment to where you start to convince guys that, like, hey, down 14 late, down 19, this is exactly where we want to be. And we got everything it takes to be able to draw ourselves back and to create a storybook ending, which they've done so many times.
You're 100% right. You know, nothing great is ever accomplished without that adversity. And it's one of those, like you said, boot camp, or in June, or in Puerto Rico, whatever. There's all these little things that add up that he uses as motivators, and it works. And you can't just say, oh, they got lucky this one time, because he's either the luckiest person in the world, but I always, you know, Roy Williams saying, I'm sure it was from someone else, but hard work creates luck. You know, you're not just lucky because you're, you know, it's not a real thing, but, you know, you put yourself in a position, and that's what Bill Self does with so many different teams. So
matchup-wise, I like it, though.
Yeah.
I like it. Teams that usually try to speed us up, to play fast, I think we usually do a pretty good job
That's what we did last year in Missouri.
Of handling those,
you know, they tried to do the 40 minutes of hell, and we just said we had playmakers.
Yeah.
We had guys get it to the middle, pitch, dunk, open threes, whatever. The question will be, how do we handle pressure? Because they will. Dennis Gates gets his guys to play extremely hard and physical and tough. We got to be able to take care of the ball, which we've done a much better job of
as of
the
late
last few games. Like we had 7 turnovers against Kansas City, and we had maybe 8 against UConn. Mm-hmm. So we've done a much better job of handling pressure and getting rid of the careless turnovers. Like there's going to be turnovers in a game when you're trying to make an extra pass or whatever. But the careless ones, if you can limit those, it makes all the difference in the world. So playmakers-wise, we got them. We got to stay on the floor. It's going to be an up-and-down game. Missouri likes to play fast. We don't have a ton of depth, and we talk every week about our top four and our next four. And that next four's got to grow up. They grew up against UConn to a degree. I thought Johnny Furphy was great. I think Nick is still kind of on the struggle bus, hit a couple shots the other night, but you know, hit his 2 out of his first 3 and then struggled the rest of the game. We just need some consistency out of him. I really, really like what we're getting out of Johnny Furphy. I think the one guy that everyone's a little bit perplexed on offensively is DeJuan. As good as he was against Kentucky, he struggled since that game. And I don't know what it is, because he's always played with such calm. And he's always just the guy that can finish those kind of hook shots from 10 feet. And those haven't been going in. And so it's just different. And when those don't happen, it definitely slows things down. We need DeJuan's float game to be better. We need him to shoot more threes, and we need him to play better around the rim. He's been unbelievable for us.
The first thing I think would be helpful to see from the next four guys that you're talking about isn't this huge outburst of point productivity. We just need them to come in to be solid, to be trustworthy, you know, to not give up leads, which will allow a guy like Dewan Harris to not have to play 38 minutes.
Yeah.
Who's already, you know, carrying a significant load.
Not just Dewan, it's in the top four.
Yeah, running the offense, guarding the other team's best player, you know, knowing where everyone else is supposed to be. Like, that's a lot. And I don't think Dewan necessarily had to log those types of minutes last year, which, you know, in a way could be wearing on him a little bit, which is why we see his offensive productivity maybe not being as effective as we could. And so I think, you know, you think about the next four, that would be the thing that I think is important to see at first. Hey, Nick, you don't necessarily need to worry about making threes. Just come in and be solid. You know, come in and
make winning plays.
Yeah, winning plays.
So, you know, it's right now we're not going to notice it as much because we play Missouri on Saturday, then we don't play again for 7 days with finals. Then we play Yale on the 22nd and Wichita State on the 30th. So we got some gaps. So the minutes aren't as big a deal right now, but the minutes will be a big deal when we get into the grind. And then when you're logging those 38 minutes on December 18th or whatever, that affects you in March. So to your point, we definitely need those other four guys to take the burden off of their conditioning, basically, and be able to trust Parker Brown or Nick Timberlake enough to have Hunter and Dewan on the bench for extended amount of times. And so we'll see how that all shakes out. If it happens that they play 37 minutes, we're going to be okay. But I'd like a much more well-rested Dewan is a much better Dewan in March.
Yeah, for sure. We got to get that tapered off because, I mean, your mind went automatically to March, as it should, because that's when the stakes are the highest. But you also got to consider the dog days of January, February in the Big 12 playing the Saturday-Monday turnaround.
Which we always have a lot of because they want us on Big Monday. Mm-hmm. Like, we play more Big Monday games than anyone, and everybody plays on Saturday. So it's never like a road and a road. It's usually one or the other, but you're then traveling within 48 hours one way or another. And it's tough on me, yep. And I don't do anything.
Got to keep the voice right.
Yeah. Well, it's been fun, buddy. I'm looking forward to getting Coach Leipold on this podcast and just recapping everything. So,
yeah, we'll try to get Thomas on too, you know, with he's playing overseas right now, Philippines. Reach out to him to hop on. A little difficult with the travel back, and then once he's getting here. But I'm really excited to have him on to be able to hear about play-by-play from the play we just talked about, you know, to get his own insight and feedback from that historic block, but then also what this occasion and moment really means for he and his family as he's going down as one of the all-time greats.
And, you know, we got to get ready for a lot of retirements. You know, Thomas is starting it off. Then we're going to have,
Skinny Johnson this
Saturday, mm-hmm. member of his family. But then you go Frank Mason, Devontae, Ochai, Udoka, Jalen. I mean, there's a lot of guys that need to go up in there that are, it's just a matter of getting the timing to do it. So I'm looking forward to seeing T. Rob. He was so special. And it's not great timing, but it is. There's timing to it that T-Rob can interact with KJ
right.
about what he went through with his situation yep. and KJ. And so that'll be great to see. And a lot of former players are coming back. I know Elijah, Tyshawn, Travis, amongst others, will be in attendance to honor mm-hmm. their teammate heading up to join you on the south side, which we're running out of space, by the way.
Hey, ain't no seats. They're about to be ain't no room.
Hey, there's no room. Like, they're going to have to, like, move it a row up or down to – because we got what I just mentioned, six other guys?
Just don't cover up the windows, man. Do what you need
I know,
to do.
But
– take mine down. Just don't cover up the windows. Come on.
What do you mean take yours down?
I'm going to see if they got to make room, put it back.
No, we're not going to take yours down. Why would you take yours down?
We got to make room, man. We got more coming.
Don't act like you're unselfishly willing to take your jersey
don't off. Don't cover the windows. How about that?
I don't believe you want to take it down. I mean, you should want it up there.
It serves purpose.
Nice guy. If I was up there, I would never have said that. It's a big if. This has been a fun Jayhawker podcast brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System and Black and Veatch. Go to bv.com/careers. Check out Black and Veatch and opportunities with them. Large, large. We're here in Kansas. Kansas City. It's great stuff. We appreciate everyone's support. We'll have Coach Leipold on, Robertson, Thomas Robinson, and as we dig deeper into this winter, we're gonna have some good stuff. We'll get Billis on one time. He was just in town and experienced the he's experienced it a ton. After talking to Dad after the game, he's like, that was pretty special. And that's a Duke guy.
Dookie.
Jay Hawker Podcast out. Rock chalk.